This is the Welcome to Fatherhood Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Kelly, and I'm here to remind you, however you're listening and wherever you're listening, that as dads, we're just like moms. Except we're dads. Ha ha! All right. Words can't express how grateful I am to each and every one of you for answering the bell, for responding to the ad that I had running on Facebook and IG, or for reaching out to me personally and saying I want to be a part of this. So just to start off, my name is Kelly Jean-Philippe. I host the Welcome to Fatherhood podcast. And the conversation that we're going to have between the four of us today is something that has become of interest to me because of personal experience, and also as a light bulb that went up, that went off in my head, realizing that I don't think, as far as I'm concerned, I know of a space where these conversations, or this conversation specifically, is happening. We're going to talk about our individual experiences with a very unfortunate event, which is supporting a partner, a spouse, through a miscarriage. What I don't want us to do is to focus solely on how we were supporting our partner or our spouse. What I do want us to do is to talk explicitly about how we were also experiencing something to that magnitude within our context. So that's the groundwork for our conversation. You know, we live in an era where it's really difficult to really say anything transparently and openly without offending anyone. And so I want to honor that and say that in our conversation, nothing that we say to each other is meant to offend the other person. What I do want us to be mindful of is to respect each other's experiences. And we can comment on each other's experiences because that's what the conversation is going to be about. And though we might disagree on some things, who knows? I don't know what the conversation is going to be like. Let's disagree in a way that continues to honor the humanity and the experience that we all share, because we're all here for this particular purpose. And the other thing that I want to say, which is lastly, is let's go as deep as the group is willing to go and as you're willing to go individually. I'm wearing a sweater that says Black men have feelings. So if you just, you know, block out the black part, men have feelings. Okay. And so without getting all mushy and gushy and all of that stuff, what I'm asking us to do as men is to portray an image of manhood that is not often portrayed, which is men being vulnerable, men being able to access their feelings, men being able to put their feelings on the table in front of other men and trust each other with the experiences that we've undergone. So those are the rules. This is the mission, should you choose to accept it, and you have because you're here. And so I'll start off with my experience, man. Like I said, my name is Kelly. I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am 37 years old. I've been married for 4.5 years to my beautiful wife. We have a toddler, Julius Camillo. That's his whole first name, by the way. People think my son's name is Julius. It's not Julius. It's Julius Camillo. He is 2.5. He has the stamina, the spirit, the energy, the intelligence of like a 12-year-old. So he is just that type of kid. And getting to him has been a journey. We are currently expecting our second child, another boy, due March of 2023. Wow. And so getting to him has been yet another journey. So in between both of these gifts of these boys that I've been gifted, that my wife and I have been gifted, we've experienced a total of 4 miscarriages. Mm. So this is dear and near to my personal experience. And looking back at where we came from and where we are now, reflecting on this journey of conception, of getting a child, of trying again for a sibling, and going through the valleys of a miscarriage again, and not being elated that we're anticipating our baby, with all of the emotions that come with it, reflecting on that whole journey, I don't think I'm able to really put succinctly into words what all of my feelings have been, whether or not I've coped with things in a responsible way or in the right way. I have no idea. So this is going to be a process of discovery for me talking to you guys. But what I can say is that I have noticed a growth in the ways that I was able to be in tune with myself and be in tune with my wife at the times that we were going through all of that stuff. So this is the larger context by which you are meeting me today, for those of you who are meeting me for the first time. And those of you who I've had some connection with before, namely Alex and Augusta, this is a part of me that you are now aware of. So this is where I'm at right now. I'm going to stop and then let you guys go ahead and give your own versions of an introduction, if you will. And then we'll just keep going.
Yeah, I'm Jeffrey Collins. I'm from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. So yeah, I was saying to Kelly earlier that I think my experience will be a bit different just with like the healthcare system here too. Hmm. I too have a toddler. She's 2.5 now. And like you, she has the mind of a 12-year-old, you know, like,
yeah, man.
her brain is so much further ahead than her body can be. So she gets like so frustrated when she can't do the things that she knows she can. But it's just incredible to have someone so vibrant, so full of life after, you know, our first try was a miscarriage, you know? So it is really quite impactful to go through such a huge letdown and such a huge trauma, to have someone on the other side who's just nothing but pure sunshine, you know, nothing but a ray of light. So it was, I guess, about 3.5 years ago that we had our miscarriage, and I too don't know if I dealt with it well, but it took a long time. It took over a year for us to really figure out ways around it, ways through it, and kind of let it scab over like a wound on a tree and grow past that.
So my name is Augusta Foster. Me and Brother Kelly have had this conversation before. Like I said, glad to be in the space. Once again, Augusta Foster. Everybody calls me the neighborhood hope dealer. I grew up South Central, grew up in South Central California, mostly Long Beach, San Pedro, along the water. I've lived a very, very interesting life. One day I'll write the book, but I'm a father of 5. Whenever I break down my children, I never differentiate my oldest daughter, who I've been active in her life and present in her father since she was 3.5 months old. I never tell people, you know, I have 4 natural kids, and that, no, it's just my whole gang. It's my entire basketball team of children. And I group them all together because they all share my name. They're all a part of my legacy. No one gets more preferential treatment. Everyone gets the same amount of love as often as I could provide it and as much as I could pour into them. I would say if there is, you know, people will ask you, who's your favorite child? And most of us, if you have more than one, we try to lie to ourselves and say, oh, I don't have a favorite. But I have a daughter who my mother affectionately refers to as, she calls her the light-skinned version of me, because she looks like me, she smiles like me, she has the humor of me, her mannerisms, her thoughts, and even some of the things I'm not very fond of that I'd done in the past and how I'd lived before I progressed is things that I see in her now. but she's the first successfully born natural child that I'd had after having a miscarriage with my ex-wife. So there's always that feeling of, like, even the way how Jeff described it, like how you look at this child and they're so vibrant and full of life. And I never really took into account that as somebody who now has, you know, five children, but has birthed four, I never really even thought about looking at them and taking into account, like, I could have six. Like, I sometimes forget, because it's been almost a decade. But even, like, when this conversation came about, I was like, I never think about it, but I look at her, and there are moments once in a while, specifically on her birthdays and on the anniversary of the miscarriage, where I think, like, what could have been, you know, what would have been my other son or daughter. So I think I look at her, and it's, you know, the fact that we were in the position of it and early in and had names picked out and clothes purchased and it told everyone, and we, you know, to sit up and having to take all that stuff and not return it, just literally just throw it away. But now to, like, look at all of my kids and just, it's a blessing to be able to have gone from a tragedy to the feeling of triumph of fatherhood. Like, it really is, man.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. My name is Alex Ortiz. I live in the Philadelphia area. And known Kelly for many years. Just we attended the same church a while back, and now we bump into each other every once in a while. So it's a great thing. So for me, the way that this story kind of hits home is, I'm married. I've been married for 22 years, and our first, you know, 5 to 7, our first few years, we were just more like, hey, let's enjoy each other. Let's take our time. You know, we were in that kind of like planning family mode, if that makes sense, right? Where it's like, we don't want to jump into it. We came from, you know, families where kids came out early, you know? And so we were like, listen, let's try and like establish ourselves, get a nice place, get our careers in order. And then let's start, you know, having a family. And it was an interesting thing. I don't regret it at all. But what happened was that we had some difficulty having children, you know, and at first we had some difficulty, but ultimately we were blessed with my first son, with my son, AJ, who's now 15, or he's going to be 15 next week. But after having him, you know, we wanted to continue to grow our family, you know, in our design, right? In our plan, we wanted to have more kids. My wife was and is an amazing mother. Like, I can't even describe it, you know? And so we were excited to have the opportunity to have more kids and give her the opportunity to be a blessing to more kids. And I believe I'm an amazing father, you know, but you know how, when you look at the other side of this, it's like, you know, it would be a great opportunity for her to have just as many kids as possible. Right. So, we tried for, about 7 years and didn't have any more luck. And my upbringing was that I was an only child until about 10. My parents were divorced, and I had a brother with a different mother and a sister with a different father, if that makes sense. So in a way, I was an only child for a big portion of my childhood. And I always said to myself, when I become a father, I want to have a huge family. I envision those Christmas and Thanksgiving celebrations on a big giant table, fighting over Cheerios, you know, things like that. But 7 years had gone by and we didn't have any luck. And so we gave up on the idea, and we were like, oh, wow, what a blessing, though. We have AJ, right? We have one child, and many people don't have any, right? And so we wanted to count our blessings. But then suddenly we found out in December of 2015 that my wife was pregnant again. And we were going to announce it at my birthday party. We had family coming over for my birthday. And we would have been about 9 weeks on at that point. And that's when we had the miscarriage. And my wife suffered a miscarriage literally the weekend before my birthday. And it was such a last moment that we couldn't cancel it. And everybody was going to be there, right? But, and so my wife was distraught, but we didn't tell anybody why. So it was the most awkward birthday party ever for me, you know? That's really it. We struggle to kind of deal with it, her in her way, me in my way. I think sometimes us men, we try to solve problems in a different way. We can be black and white and we want to just move forward and like keep climbing up the mountain. But my wife was in a place where she wanted to kind of sit in that valley for a little bit and really feel it. So we struggled with that. And it was a tough experience, and I look forward to digging in further with you guys.
Of full transparency, I'm really fighting back tears right now after just listening to all of you guys' experience, because this is obviously something that none of us wanted to experience. So I guess the first topic that I want us to explore is to talk about a little bit when we got together with our partners, our spouse. What were the dreams? What were the aspirations? What were the, Alex, you said, envisioning Christmas and Thanksgiving, big, large table. What were some of those things that we had before our eyes were even opened to something like this happening?
The Disney movie, literally. It's the best way to describe it. I mean, I had four children with my ex-wife. So, I mean, already speaking to that alone, no one plans on going into a marriage to fail and end up divorced. So initially it was, and I think it's from speaking in the group, I think I'm the only stepdad in here. For me, it was somewhat of an awkward feeling because I whirlwind relationship, fall in love, adopt my daughter, give her my name. But there's that itching feeling where, like, you know, as you know, you, everyone around you, you got to have one of your own, you got to have one of your children, and that where it wasn't really a pressure on me, but I could see my wife at the time, it was a lot of pressure on her from a lot of the women in the family. You have to give that man a child of his own, a child of his own. So I think there was a lot of, you know, in watching her and her movements and her attitude and the mood swings, it was a lot of pressure on her to do something that people almost made her feel obligated to do. Like, you have to give him a child. For me, it wasn't as if like I was doing it. I was fine. I was like, I could just have one kid. Like, my mother was 11 of 12. Even though I always knew I wanted a lot of kids, you know, after having one for like 7 months, I was like, whoo, this is tough. This isn't uncle godfather job where I could just like send them back home. It just was so much. But then it was, okay, well, now I settled in with, I could have a child of, you know, quote unquote, my own. So going into it and all right, we're going to have this one. And like I said, we had names picked out. I remember we sat up for nights on end picking out names, you know, and it was okay. If it was going to be a boy, this was going to be a boy. And I kept saying, I was like, you know, I had a dream and it was, you know, it's going to be a boy. So we have this boy name and this boy clothes. And I sat up, I painted a room, putting together like everything. Everything was prepared. And, you know, you do these announcements, you get ready for a baby shower. And that was all of the plans. But, you know, even to how Alex said earlier, that was our plan. Our plan, you know, at times very much differs from the plan that God has for you. And in the moment, you know, even to say into that afterwards, as somebody who's extremely has gotten back being big into their faith, the thing I always think back in that moment was, it was difficult to hear people go, you know, God's going to work it out. It's going to be all right. I'm like, I don't want to hear that right now, bro. Like, I don't. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. I did everything right. And even moving from that, like even now, like thinking about it, still like bugs me because it's the conversations of it's going to be okay. It's all right. But that looking at the perfect Disney movie future and then sitting up questioning what the hell did you do wrong or what did you do to deserve this?
My wife and I were both divorced at the time. So when we met, like first date, it was like, do you want kids? You know, like right out the gate, because we both left our previous partners because they just decided they didn't want to have kids anymore. You know, like being in a relationship with someone for 10 years. And then one day they're like, I don't think that's for me. And you're like, well, we got married on the, understanding that we want to go into that. So first date. Yeah, we just like cleared the air. Like, do you want this? I'm not wasting your time. Don't waste my time. And yeah, you know, we were like, dreaming big. We felt very romantic. We really like got swept up in the honeymoon phase. We wanted five kids. And then, you know, as time went on, we kind of realized that two kids would probably be best because we didn't want to get like outnumbered. And I've always wanted to have kids, like ever since I was conscious, really. And I used to run our summer camp. So I was like, I'm going to be fine with kids. I'm going to be great. Like I've got all this energy. I know all these games, you know. It's not until you start trying to have kids do you realize that it's really work to try, you know, like it doesn't come easily. Sometimes it takes several cycles before something will catch, and those moments of hope where you're like, oh, the period is late, it's not it, you know, and like you get your hopes up really high with that, and then that will let you down. And then finally when one does, you're like, you know, all of your energy goes into that. And we were telling people, I think a few weeks into it, I was like, oh, well, it's not 12 weeks yet. You know, I'm telling people at work, and I'm just getting so excited because I am sure that it's going to stick. So there was a lot of hope on that first one. Because we were older at that point. We were in our late 20s when we met. And we just like fast-tracked our lives. We met 3 months later, moved in. A year we were married. Next year we were already trying to have kids. So it was just hard for the universe to tell us to slow down. You know, it was hard for us to... get everything else, you know, like we're putting in the energy and the time and the investments to get everything else set up, you know, the house, the car, the job, just for the universe to pump the brakes on us in the most devastating way possible.
You said something there, Jeff, that serves as sort of as kind of a trigger for me. I don't know who, to this day, I can't pinpoint who was the one who said this to me. But in setting expectations and talking about expectations, someone had said to me that don't be surprised if the first one doesn't stick, in those exact words.
I wish like in sex ed, you know, they were like, just so you know, 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriages. Like if I was in high school and I heard that, I would be holding on to that information into my 30s, you know, but. In sex ed, you just get the basics. You just get how to conceive, what it's like to go through a pregnancy, and that's it. There was no talk about any of the struggles or any of the pitfalls. I'm like, this is basic science. Like, why am I not learning this then? Why do I have to rely on people who have or had not had these experiences? Like, my mother had not experienced any miscarriages. But my wife's mother did, and she didn't even find out until we had a miscarriage, because it's just like, it's so taboo to talk about that people aren't telling their kids.
I was going to say, Jeffrey saying that, man, the it's wild that you say that, because when the miscarriage occurred, it was, you know, people from church and family and all of this. One of the last people to really be fully honest with me was my own mother. And me and my mom are tight. We look alike, move alike. You know, all of my children, my youngest daughter, we refer to her as Tiny Pam because she's a spitting image of my mother. And it was maybe about 2 weeks after. And for 3 days, I didn't leave the house. I didn't go to work. I was AWOL from work. I was absent without leave. I was like, I'm not going in. I'm cool. Like, I just want to sit in my little box. I just want to like drink my little liquor. I don't know how to heal properly yet. I'm just going to sit here and just be in the dark and mope to myself and not be a good support mate to my wife. My mother, I never knew. She said, you know, y'all will work through this and this. And I remember being upset and asking, like, telling my mother, you know, out of my mouth, say, you know, like, what do you know? And she stood there and said, you know, you were my first successful child. I had 5 miscarriages before you were born. I never knew that, bro. Like it took me to go through that for my own mother. So here in this moment where I was like hurt, I said, you were like, you could have, but it was to Kelly, it's so taboo. Like, oh, we're not going to have this conversation. But it took my mother seeing me in a point of like absolute depression to be like, all right, now's the time to have the talk. So it's better for us to have these talks in spaces like this than for your son, your daughter, your niece, your cousin to be at their lowest moment, because all of us in here were low when it happened. Because I can speak for me, it was a feeling and a spirit of failure on me that was hard to get off. It shouldn't have to come to that for somebody to be transparent enough, specifically your parent, to be like, look, this is what I did. I went through that. But it was in that moment, my mother being like, this is more work than you think. Y'all not the first. Y'all not the last ones. You were my 6th child, technically. And I sat there and was, it takes a lot. It's more than, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. See you in 9.5 months. You know, like how they told us in health class, which clearly Canada and America are handshaking on that foolishness with their education wise.
Alex, anything you want to add?
Yeah, just in terms of, you know, what I was envisioning, you know, I already mentioned that I was kind of envisioning those big, you know, Christmas, big Thanksgiving. But the other thing was, in my mind, I literally like was so arrogant that I had it planned out. Like, I'm going to have a girl, 1 daughter and 2 twin boys. And I had, you know, alternating names for the boys in my head, Alexander, Jacob, Jacob, Alexander. Like, that was going to be like, it was literally lined up in my head. And there was a certain level of just arrogance walking into it. And maybe arrogance isn't the right word. Maybe it's just ignorance, right? And just not understanding, or maybe not accepting that something bad like that could happen to me and my wife. You know what I'm saying? You know, and I think I visualized things more than my wife did. She came from a tough upbringing. There was a lot of just, you know, hurt. And so for her, she was more like, you know, grateful for anything, right? Whereas I'm like, well, shoot, I deserve this. And when it didn't happen, I looked at God and I was angry and annoyed with him and pissed off at him. And I let him know, not in front of people, not even in front of my wife. Like, I went in the shower. That was my secret spot. You know, when I'm taking a long 40-minute shower, my wife's like, you still in there? And I was crying and yelling and screaming and mad at him, because you made me wait 7 years and then you're going to just not see us through on this. My wife, the perfect mother that she is, and me, I think I'm a great father. You won't give us a chance. And so I was mad. And then I looked around, and the thing that was like insulting to me was people who had no right having kids, having multiples and just popping it out, and no safe household and no show, man.
It
killed me, because I would, and I would turn and look to the side and be like, and guys, I mean, is this the right way to think? No, right? We all know,
but we did
now, right? But we did. And I'm willing to admit that. I looked to my left and I looked to my right and I said, God, you're going to give that fool another child, but you won't give me and my wife a child.
You know what was most upsetting, bro? Seeing people who had kids and then like right after they got pregnant again And then right after that, they got pregnant again. And I'm like, hold on, man. Wait a minute. Like, I know this person. Like, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but damn.
But if I could, but if you could point out somebody imperfect, it was them.
It was them. Like, come on, man.
Listen, when you have neglected kids already, but yet they're getting, being gifted additional kids, like, I'm like,
what are they doing that I'm not doing? Like, do I have to go that route so that I can get a kid?
That was huge. Like, I saw people who, like, have no respect for their children having kids. Like, people in my family, I'm like, man, like, why do you have four? And why is it so easy for you? And you have no respect for them. Like, none. Why do you want them? I want them. You know, like, I'm so emotionally prepared.
Right.
Like, here you are, you're trying to do what you think is right, right? Jeff, I think you said it earlier, and Alex, you alluded to that too. Get the job, prepare the home. Augusta, here you are preparing the room. I mean, you're doing everything that you think you're supposed to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
The approach is, you think you're having the right approach, and then it's just not happening. It's just not happening. So, Augusta, earlier you said that there is this feeling of failure, of personal failure that you experience. I wonder if that's something that we've all shared. And let's talk about how is it that we've experienced that feeling of failure.
It was the failure to Alex's, to the thing Alex, Brother Alex said a while ago. I think arrogance was the right word. I'll be real with you, man. I said my mother was 11 of 12. Like that was back in the day when, you know, they were just knocking them out. We're just having boatloads of kids. Go work the farm. You know, with biblical numbers of children. And I went in thinking, you know, man, my grandmother, my uncles, all these men in my family, they just had, because no one talked about miscarriages. No one, you know, I had uncles who were Rolling Stones. This is this wife. This is your other aunt. So I'm just thinking, you know, man, I'm young, I'm handsome, you know, I'm doing it. Moreover, I'm doing it the right way. Like, I've slowed down. I'm not in the streets. I've gotten married. I'm a father to a child that I didn't birth, but I'm doing everything right. Man, I'm going to get my kid. You know, let me come in here. Hey, listen, old lady, boom. All right, give me my kid. And
let me interject right there, Augusta. I'm going to push back and disagree on arrogance being the right word precisely because of what you're describing. Is that arrogance, or is that the expectation that was set based on what, on the evidence that we've seen? 11 of 12, biblical numbers of kids.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it might be a little bit of
confidence, if anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're confident in your abilities. You're not arrogant. You're like, right. I have the numbers. I have the data.
Right. Like historically, this is what we do. We make,
we pop them out.
Yeah. We make them, you know, I said, after, like, I'm batting 1,000 afterwards. But in that moment, it was like, yeah, like this is what we do. And then it doesn't happen. And the mindset is, all right, so you failed. It's not like, oh, it was that stench and feeling of failure. And then that feeling of, you know, like Alex said, like, I'm sitting up questioning God. I'm running through my brain like, bro, I did everything right. I did everything right. But I got partners from the neighborhood who are on baby mama number 7, who are in and out of jail. They don't have contact with the kids. They don't want contact with the kids. They don't want to be active fathers. I'm coming from third generation stepfather, where the two other men who carried this name didn't want to be active. But here I am wanting to be present and loving as a father. And this is what I get.
We'll be right back. more succinctly, what did you feel like you failed at?
It was to a certain extent, not even as the father, because I had a child. I had my daughter. I really feel like I'd let my wife down, because you're doing, like I said, you're doing everything honorable before God. Like when I say, you know, people joked at my wedding, "We can't believe you're getting married." I said, you're not helping me right now. I
was way to kick it off.
Man, I was like, yeah, like way to go, best man. Appreciate it. Nice. But the fact of like I've slowed down, I found a woman, I'm doing everything that you required me to do. I should get this. I deserve this because I've checked all the boxes that you told me to do. I'm paying the tithes. I'm going to church. I'm taking my kid. I'm taking my old lady. I'm feeding the homeless. I'm doing everything you've required of me. I'm doing it all. And this is what I get. Like it was failure. Then on the reason I say as a part of a husband, it was because I'm supposed to do this for her, because my daughter's father wasn't ever around. To this day, we still don't know who he is. Now, I'm supposed to give my daughter a sibling. I'm supposed to give my wife, who I've made an honest woman, a child. Now, I'm not doing that. No, like, I'm not going to see you on Sunday, bro. We're not going to be there Sunday. I'm not coming to service Sunday, because it hurts and it sucks, because I've done everything that was required of me and I got no return on the investment.
When I think too, you know, it comes down to purpose, right? You think as a man, what is our purpose? And I think for me, I was concerned about, as I was getting older, I was concerned about meeting that purpose, but also leaving a legacy. And so for me, it was like, you know, I want to have children that will make a difference in this world. I want to train up children that can be difference makers. And that kind of hurt. It was a big letdown when I knew, okay, it won't have, you know, I don't want to oversee the fact that I have a child. I have a son. He's a blessing. And we pour into him every single day, right? But I think the mistake you can make as men is we can be so concrete, so black and white, that we will say losing a child is not as bad because I already have a child. But that's a lie. That's a mistake, you know, because we're not all, you know, I was talking with my wife about it. We're not all always happy. We're not all always sad. There's different times for us to have different emotions. And so me being sad because of a loss doesn't mean I am not grateful for my son. It's just, I missed out on number two. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was, I felt let down by God. I felt like I was a letdown as a man, you know, whether it had to do with sperm count or not, right? You still feel like, hey, I'm part of the formula here. And you know, and it just happened to be that it just was, there was no physical reasons why neither of us could have children. It just didn't happen. And so that's the part that I just struggled with, you know, it was tough.
I do have a bit of a different perspective. I grew up in a different faith. I grew up in the Baha'i faith. It's along the Judeo-Christian line. It's another Abrahamic religion. But I don't have that same type of connection to God as, you know, a single all-powerful being, as Christianity teaches. And there is a lot to do with individuality in the Baha'i faith. So when that happened, I was less thinking like God let me down, and thinking more like, you know, I messed this up. This is my fault. And I took a lot of blame onto myself. And the way I felt like the failure was that I came at the actual miscarriage scientifically, thinking like, well, you know, like we are animals. Our bodies are just physiological, you know, bags of goo, you know, and thinking like, you know, like you can get the flu and then die from it, or you can get the flu and then have antibodies, right? So I was like very much in that headspace. But on the individuality part, I felt like I was the lodestone in our family. You know, I felt like emotionally I was there to support my wife through everything. And this pulled the floor out from underneath me. I felt like a building imploding on itself, and I was letting you know, everyone in the building down. I was letting everyone collapse with me because I couldn't hold us up. So it was hard for me, especially someone who grew up to, you know, a divorced single mother. I was also the lodestone in that situation too. You know, I was holding my mother up for a very long time. So when this happened, I felt like I completely failed my wife. And I remember when we got back from the ultrasound, I drove us home and I got in the door and I collapsed. You know, I fell to the floor and I couldn't breathe. And I felt like she had to support me in that moment. I was like, man, this isn't how it's supposed to go. Like, that's my job. Yeah, yeah. You know, and I just like, I felt like a cloud of smoke, you know, like I couldn't hold myself up. There was nothing tangible to me whatsoever at that time. Yeah, I mean, it did bring me back to my faith somewhat. And, you know, I did try to pray for some guidance through it. Yeah, but, you know, not having clergy and not having a church, I didn't really have a space to go to, you know, talk about these things. So I turned to my community of friends and family, which, yeah, I mean, like, you know, they're all kind of my age and they're all kind of like, man, that's horrible. If you need anything from me, let me know. But they hadn't experienced it yet, and some have now. And like, I'm kind of glad that I was the one to have experienced it, because again, I feel like a lodestone. So when it happened to them, I was like, I got you. Like, I'm going to call you. I'm going to send you Uber Eats. I'm going to, you know, whatever. And I like, I'm there to be the support, you know.
I think that that's key, you know, the fact that we all in our own way found the community eventually to support us. Men in general don't typically do that. We like to lone it. We like to be a lone ranger and not admit, you know, what's going on. And it happened to me for a while. My wife and I discussed it and we were like, she said, you know, you didn't mourn at first. You didn't really feel it. It's almost like you didn't acknowledge it. And I would just encourage us, because, you know, our wives were reminded of this every 30 days or so, right? Whereas we like are ready to move on. And well, I'll speak for myself. I was ready to move on. I came up from a child, you know, hood that was like, I needed to escape the problems. So I got busy. I started doing a lot of things, a lot of them good things, right? But good things with a bad foundation. I got, you know, I left. I was trying to escape something else. And here I was in my, you know, in my late 30s doing the same thing. With my wife suffering, I was trying to move on. And I was trying to like push forward. And I was trying to tell her like, oh, you know, aren't you blessed about what we do have? No, that answer. Yeah, sure. You're blessed, but we have to be real about our emotions, right? And about what we're going through at the moment. And I wasn't willing to do that until, like Jeffrey was saying, he took it to that community of friends. And the real time when I started to actually feel it, I told a really, really good friend of mine, hey man, we just lost the baby. And he noticed. He was like, something's up. What's up with you? How I see something weighing on you. And I said, we just lost a baby. And he came and my wife reminded me of this, but he came and he put his hand on my chest. And then she said, that was the first time that I really like cried about it. It was crazy. We need to trust in our friends and our family and that community, not just anybody though, because it can't be anybody. You know, there's some people out there that come up with the stupid, like, oh, why don't you just adopt? Like, that's not downplaying the adoption concept. I would love the concept of adopting a child in need, 100%. But that's not the answer at that moment that we need to hear, you know? Or things happen for a reason. I'll kick you in the throat.
Yeah. All your homeboys ain't the best support system. Right. I ain't even gonna put it to your homeboys, all your family ain't even the best support system in the moment. Yep. Like it in that moment, it's like, yo, man, you know, like I said, like for all the folk in church, and you know, I had to go back and apologize to folks. I said, man, look, I know I almost choked you and cussed you out at insert Church of God in Christ, but like But it was like in the moment, like, I don't want to hear your prayers. I don't want to hear your this. You know, you go to your partners and your homeboys, and it's like, oh, bro, you'll be straight. Y'all could just get right back to it. It's like, I don't need that right now, bro. Like, yeah, I'm out here like NFL linebacker size, but like right now, bro, like I really need to cry on your shoulder. I really need a hug. Cause like this hurts. This really hurts. And I think even in the moment, like how Jeff said something real, like the you being the, I'm the cornerstone for this family. And that brother going in the house and crying, like I'm not mad at it. Like I wanted in that moment, I'm like, all right, I need to go and cry. For the 3 days where I sat up, I look back and I'm like, it was so selfish in me, you know, to not be there for my wife. But even in talking to my therapist, when I spoke to him, he was like, no, bro, it wasn't selfish. Like in that moment, you had to do that. He was like, it's bad, but you had to get that you time, even if it wasn't the best. But to be the cornerstone and not feel like the cornerstone, like this goes beyond your religious beliefs and all that. Like just as a man, like, yo, I need to do this and I'm not doing it. And the family right now can't depend on me. Like walls crushing in. Like it.
And those 3 days of crying, that's not selfishness. That's self-preservation.
Yeah,
right?
It took me years to learn that.
You have a gaping wound.
It took years for me to learn that. Because after it was, oh man, that was so selfish of me. And my therapist was like, no. He was like, you know, you were almost fighting people who said stuff. He was like, for that 3 days, you literally may have, like, his exact words were, you might have kept yourself out of prison. I was like, yeah, I said, you may be on to something.
Well, I would encourage, I mean, I would tell both of you, I would applaud you for the way that you guys mourned, because I'm sure your wife was like, yes, it's real for him too. You know what I'm saying?
I couldn't help myself. Like I just fell apart. Like the moment we got in the door, I like my knees were gone. Like I had no control over my mourning process.
And I don't, there's nothing like to me, you're living as a human. We were created, man or not, we're created with these emotions.
Yeah.
So why are we acting, you know, like it's something we have to hide? And that part is really, it really hurts us as men. It hurts us in our relationships with our wives, with our kids, if we're not willing to tie into those emotions. So it's crazy.
Because vulnerability is a bad word.
That's what I wanted to say, Augusta, was like, you know, you're telling your friends, like, I don't need to hear your prayers. I need a hug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bro.
Like, so many times we heard, like, my wife is from Mexico City, so, like, her family is Catholic, you know, and just, like, so many times, like, oh, well, you know, it's part of God's plan.
It's not.
Like, and, like, that's fine. That's part of his plan. But, like, I need vulnerability right now, and you're closing yourself off to me. Like have some empathy, get down on the floor with me, you know, like be at eye level, put your arm on me and just like, don't even say anything. You know, that's almost better.
Be Christ-like. Be Christ-like in that moment.
And that's it's like probably a whole separate episode somewhere else. But sometimes the advice that we get is just horrific. And even when people are trying their best to come from a good place, and I think we have to show a little bit of like, okay, they can only give what they have, right? So, and I think the key here is like, I need to watch where I go with my stuff. Because if you go to an empty well, you're not going to get any water out of it. But if, you know, so we need to find those people who are really going to support us as men. And I agree 100%. I don't know how many times I've had like the standard boxed church answer and I wanted to just smack somebody, you know? But and again, nothing, I'm not saying anything about anybody who defaults to that. I understand it, but there's times when you just have to like be with someone, hug them, like you said, Jeffrey, you know, mourn with them, get on the floor with them. I, you know, little things like somebody sending you a plate of food, my gosh, that's an action that is so, it means a lot, you know? You get a little basket or a card from somebody. And I know guys don't typically do that stuff, right? But even if it's a handshake, even as a, hey, brother, let me take you to get a coffee, or let's go hang, or let's go whatever. We can learn a lot from those moments, you know?
Let's talk about our ability or inability in that moment for us to open up to people to let them know what we were feeling and experiencing. Because I can tell you guys from the gate, I did not feel like I could say something to someone, not necessarily because of said person. I just felt like I was betraying some sort of form as a man for me to open my mouth and say something to somebody else. Like, I just didn't know how to begin to do that. So that was my experience. So let's talk about what your experience was or what your thoughts are in the moment. If you can go back and place yourself back in that moment, feet on the ground, looking around from the outside in, what was it about that moment that either made you feel comfortable with sharing with people versus not comfortable with sharing with people the tragedy that you were experiencing?
It took me a while. It took me a few days to go back to work. I think we told my wife's family first because I felt close to them. I think like the last person to find out was my own mother, actually. Because like I said, I was the lodestone for her growing up. I was her emotional support. So I didn't feel like she could emotionally support me when I knew what I was doing in my entire life. It took me several days of being at home with my wife, not talking to anybody before I started to open up or even went back to work. And when I did, I chose one person that I felt comfortable with and kind of like in a secluded area, talked about it, opened up and kind of like practiced talking about it to see like, how am I, like, am I going to just break down crying? Am I going to, get angry? Am I going to swear? Like, what am I going to do? Because I had no idea. I had no idea how I'd act. So I chose one coworker that I was close with and opened up to her. And she was very supportive. And then other people asked me, like, if I'm okay, what's going on? And I let things out little by little. It was like a trickle. And I think that was the easiest way for me to talk about it. But at some point, I was telling everybody because I was like, there's such a stigma around this. How come nobody told me? I'm going to tell everybody that, like, one out of five pregnancies can end in miscarriage. Just so y'all know, it really sucks. If it ever happens to you, come to me. Yeah. Yeah, walk down the street. Hey, one in five. Yeah. And also, obviously, some humor it really helped me get through it, too. And at some point, I was able to, disconnect my feelings about it and talk about how, like, the stigma is a real issue. But at the beginning, like, it was almost a week before I talked to anyone outside of my tight circle.
Yeah, I think my history made it hard for me to share. So as I described earlier, my upbringing, I tried to escape all sort of problems. I left my house, I left bad situations. I kind of ran from them and I got busy. So believe it or not, I literally did go to work, the next available day. And I felt like I had to continue pushing forward. Like I had this kind of like, I've got to fight through this while my wife is, suffering. I got to continue to push the family forward. I got to continue to, and it was this really distorted view of my role, right? And I regret it. I regret it because of that, I missed out on an opportunity to mourn properly, and to be a better support as a husband and to be a better father for my son, So I feel like I kind of ran from it, and it took me a while to, certain things just made it suddenly hit home. I don't know how to describe it, but there were just moments where it was like, holy crap. We lost a baby, and this may have been weeks or months later. And so I think eventually it just started with me, when that happened, then I was desperate looking for someone to kind of share with. And at the time I was, fortunate enough to have, my dad as someone I could talk to, my, a couple close friends, guys that I trusted, we just started to kind of explore more of my feelings then at that point.
Initially, to speaking to people, it wasn't even organic. I think there were a lot of a lot of people around on both my side of the family and my ex-wife's side of the family at the time who just were mentally, all of them were on that, just get back to it. Like, you'll be good. Just get back to it. And, you know, even the 3 days, like, coming out after that 3 days, like, all right, man, I'm in a haze. I just want to relax. But it was a lot of forced conversations. You know, what do y'all think happened? How was this? Are you okay? And it wasn't as much as support. So initially it wasn't organic. Like, I think I was like Alex. It took a little while. Like, I went back to work, took some FMLA time off about like 3 weeks to make sure after the DNC that, you know, like, my wife was good and relaxed and all right, cool, I could leave the house. And I remember going back to work, and one of my partners who I was real tight with, hadn't texted him or nothing. And he's like, hey, bro, like, you good? Everything all right? And I was, you know, kind of hesitating at the lunch table. You know, we go into the break room and he comes in and he just goes, he looks at me and he goes, so is there still a baby shower? And I just was, you know, just, it's all dudes in the room, you know, it's everybody, you know, former military and all of that. And I just, I put my head on the table and I'm just sobbing on the table. And he literally just, you know, and we're two totally different backgrounds. You know, this is like a white brother from Orange County, California, whose father was a firefighter and whose mother was a doctor. Like, he doesn't know struggle, anything like that. Like, he's like, oh, all my kids have been successful. And him with this totally different everything background, he just kind of just leaned in, just put his hand on my shoulder. And I just bawled, and I could feel, it's still to this day one of the oddest moments. I could feel like 4 or 5 hands just on my back, like, no, bro, it's good. You're going to be all right. That was the first time, that was like 3 weeks after, where I had a real, organic, natural conversation about it. Because everything before that was forced to give answers to family, you know, to who wanted to know, what was I going to do? What was the next move? And it took me to be like in a room of former hard charging like infantrymen and nut job military vets who I worked with to be like, no, dog, it's going to be all right. You're going to be cool, man. What you need, I can help you. Want to talk about it. So it took 3 weeks to have a real convo. And it was with one dude who I'm still tight with to this day and 5 guys who I just worked with who low-key were almost strangers.